You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Welcome to another episode of Two Peas on a Podcast. Counting down movies, music, TV, and pop culture. One top five at a time. And now, here are the Two Peas. Andy and Gerald.
Here we are again, people.
We are here.
Welcome in, Two Peas.
In a pod.
Not in a pod.
In a pod?
You don't know the name of the
peas
show by
peas are
now?
In a pod. That's
two
what peas,
peas
are.
On a podcast.
But peas are in a pod. That's what they are. They're
they
peas.
They are, but we're on it.
So we're living a lie.
We're on
we're
it.
We're living a lie. We're
what
not
is
peas.
On? What is that? That's a.
It's
a,
on? Oh. It's to be on something?
No, what is that word? That's like a on. Conjunction. Isn't that what?
Thing.
What's the
two peas?
Is
on
it an adverb? What is it? I don't know what that
it's
thing
a,
is.
A,
what type of word is on?
It's a, I don't know.
Is it conjunction or something?
I guess.
I don't know.
No, and's a conjunction. And but and
on,
or
two no, peas on a podcast. Yes. That's us. Okay. Wow, this went on way too long. Okay. But anyway, Gerald's here.
Andy is next to Gerald in the casa.
This is episode 86.
La casa. 86.
Episode 86 of Two Peas.
I talked to you a little too much.
Thank you so much for tuning in yet again. We're doing another awesome top five list.
Awesome.
You want to tell?
We haven't done it yet. So.
You want to tell the folks what we're counting down today?
Oh, today is a big one.
Yeah,
it's a big
what
one.
Is
it's
it?
It's very hard for me. It's very difficult. This was a hard top five list for me, friend.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the top five movies that bring you to tears
yeah.
or tearjerker movies.
Our top five tearjerkers. Yeah. You want to use a joke?
No. Nah. Well, I made the joke earlier that when he sent me the text for this one that the word tear was cut out.
Yeah.
So I started researching the top jerker movies.
It's a different list.
That's a whole different list.
Although I do cry in some of those. If it's all into, I get it. But it's not the top five jerker movies.
She was going to New York to become an actress, and she just...
The pizza delivery guy was just trying to make a living.
He's just trying to make a living.
It's not the top five jerker movies.
Yes, exactly.
It's the top five tear jerkers. So before we dive in, what I mean, how was your... Because I know you're not necessarily a quote-unquote research guy, but you told me you did have to research this one a little bit.
Well, here's the thing.
And you cry a lot, you said.
See, the thing is, I cry all the time. Yeah. Like at every movie. Like, I'm not going to talk about my honorable mentions, but one of my honorable mentions is a whole group of movies. I just said, these movies.
I just cry.
Every time I watch these, but yeah. I cry at unexpected times in a bunch of movies, TV shows. Mm-hmm. I cry in TV shows.
What
so
about commercials? Do you cry during commercials?
I cry during commercials.
You do?
No, I've never cried during a commercial. I probably
some
have.
Of them are emotional.
But I mean, but I just, I get emotional very, very easily.
Okay.
I like to get emotional. So when I started thinking about the movies, I did come up with five, but I mean, they represent moments in movies that I'm like, okay, every time this gets me, mm-hmm. and I like this represents this type of moment.
Sure.
So I did okay, but I did have to look and do some research. I was like, okay, that one, that one, that one. But because I cry so much, it was actually hard for me to narrow down when I cry and what movies I cry
at. Well, we got a lot of shout outs online that we'll talk about later.
Okay.
Some of the, obviously, we're only doing five, so we couldn't put them all on the list. But what was yeah. kind of hard for me when I was making the list is yeah. I was trying to decipher between like the movie itself is a very emotional watch for
okay.
me as opposed to like one scene that
one
made me cry.
Moment that just brings it out
right.
like yes like my,
so,
my number one movie is the one I thought of right away
okay.
because for some reason I cry every single time
okay
but
the
rest
stories
of them, yeah,
you know the not, stories yeah. in my five are very emotional stories
yes.
like from beginning to end
yes
that I could cry really
yes.
at any moment during them
yes
not necessarily
yeah,
in just one moment do you know what I mean
yeah
so there's a couple scenes and the reason I bring that up is there's a couple scenes on my honorable mentions that are probably better movies
okay
you know overall
yeah
but there's only like one or two scenes that would be considered
yeah.
tearjerker
yeah
you know not
yeah.
the whole movie you know what
yeah,
I mean
I'm still thinking I mean honestly the my top five I know you have it written down and submitted to paper and therefore can't
yeah.
change it but this still kind of moving in my head. I had this one movie that wants to kind of creep in,
mm-hmm.
but I have my five. I'm just gonna go with it.
Okay,
I'm just
cool.
gonna go and we're gonna see what happens.
Cool, man. So we're counting out our top five
tear jerker movies.
We gotta make sure tear jerkers.
Tear.
We're jerking tears, guys.
Tears.
We're not just
jerker
tear
movies.
Jerker. Movies.
Now I went first last time, so it's your turn.
Did you?
I did.
Wow,
it's been a long time.
A minute. Holy shit!
Yeah.
All right, so if you're ready, let's do it, man.
Let's do number five. Number five.
Five.
4, 3, 2, 1.
And here we go.
All right, guys. So
I thought you were coming with it.
I'm coming. Here I come. Okay. All right. So let's see.
Okay.
This is the most nostalgic movie on my list. All and the reason I put this on there, this movie would probably not, by most people, would probably not be considered a movie, a tearjerker. It wouldn't be considered that. But it is very nostalgic for me. Okay. So it takes me back to a place and it just makes me emotional just because I remember growing up just being in love with this movie. It was like right at the cut. I was 11 when it came out. I probably was 12 the first time I saw it on VHS tape. My buddy, Michael Underwood, I'll never forget. We were in middle school together and we literally watched this VHS. We had, I had a sleepover at his house. We watched this movie on VHS the entire night. We literally watched it over and over again, 5-6 times.
Really?
The whole night. We never went to bed.
Okay, so you're, okay, hold on. You're 11 years old. This is probably what, mid-80s?
Yeah, I was 12.
Okay.
So yeah, mid-80s.
I have no idea.
So it's from 1986 is when it was released theatrically. Stand By Me.
Stand By Me.
All right.
My wife loves that movie.
It is a great film, a coming-of-age film.
Yes, of course.
About friendship with these young boys. I want to say there were four main characters, I think. You got an awesome villain portrayed by Kiefer Sutherland in it.
Yeah.
Who plays kind of the greaser bad guy. John
Kiefer,
Cusack.
The son of Donald.
Yeah. John Cusack plays his brother, and those are emotional scenes because his brother's passed on.
Yeah.
So Will Wheaton is looking back at you know, memories with his brother John Cusack, who was like the popular college or high school quarterback.
Yeah,
and he's not. You know, he's like a poet and like a writer. Yeah. You know, he tells stories, and he's kind of like people think of him as a weirdo. So he's very different from his brother. But his brother was always very accepting of him. And those scenes when they have flashbacks to him and his brother together, that's emotional. Man, that is an emotional thing. And then the end of the movie when Chris Chambers and him are having their moment because they're best friends, and he just breaks down crying because he's afraid that he's an outcast, nobody accepts him. And Chris is like, look, man, I accept you for who you are. We love your stories. We want you to tell us your stories, you know. And he's got Chris and Vern and Teddy, you know, those are his three best friends.
Why did he have to die, Chris? Why did Denny have to die? Why? I don't know. Say that. It should have been me. Don't say that, man. I'm no good. My dad said it. I'm no good. He doesn't know you. He hates me. He doesn't hate you. He hates me. No. He just doesn't know you. He hates me. My dad hates me. He hates me. I'm no good. Someday, Gordy. You might even write about us guys if you ever get hard up for material.
Those are the only three people he needs. You know, that's the that's all they need. And one of the last lines in the film, of course, this was a story written by Stephen King. I don't know if you know.
I didn't know
who
that.
Who I also absolutely love, of course, for horror reasons. But this is based on a short story called The Body. And one of the last things that King writes in this, in fact, it might be the last line that he wrote in the story, is, I never had any friends I had like I did when I was 12 years old. Jesus, does anyone? And that's how the movie and the story ends.
Oh, wonderful.
Because, yes, they're going to find this dead body. You've obviously seen this, right?
Yeah.
So, obviously, the adventure is them going in the 50s to see this dead body, to just witness it, be in the paper, and get famous for finding this kid that they went to school with that had got hit by a train. That's the narrative is driven by that.
Okay.
But the movie is about their camaraderie and their friendship and what it's like to be a 12-year-old running out in the woods. And, you know, now, of course, in today's digital age, it's probably different for 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
But I grew up in the 80s. You grew up in the 80s and 90s. It was different. You know, you didn't have the internet. You didn't have social media. You're outside. You know, you're outside throwing the ball. You're playing in the woods. You're doing all kinds of crazy shit. And obviously, the 50s are doing that. So I just love Stand By Me because of the adolescent camaraderie that these boys had, and it's very emotional. The ending is very emotional for me. the loss that's involved with his brother, those scenes are very emotional to me. And the nostalgia where it takes me back to when I was 12, which is how old they are in the movie. Yeah. So that's why I named it, man. It just, it chokes me up every time.
Oh, beautiful.
Yep.
That's good, man.
Have you seen that one recently?
No, not recently. I've seen it once. My wife made me, let me watch it with her. When I met
she was
a big fan of the soundtrack, loved the movie. Mm. So we watched it together, but I haven't seen it since then.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the soundtrack, man. Dude. I mean, just so good. Some classic oldies. Yeah. Yeah. Benny King doing
lollipop,
this.
Lollipop, yep. Lollipop.
It's so good, man. Yeah. And Stephen King created this world, man, Castle Rock, Oregon, which is not a real town.
Yeah.
And his production company ended up being named Castle Rock.
Yeah.
And this was one of his first.
I didn't know Castle Rock was his.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay. That's him, yeah.
Castle Rock.
And all of his movies carry that production tag. But he created that little town based on, you know, his childhood growing up. And I think he grew up in Boston, if I'm not mistaken, or the Boston area. So it's loosely based on where he grew up. But just created this really cool, just like flashback world. I mean, I love a simpler time like the 1950s.
Yeah.
I just love that, man. And and Corey Feldman playing Teddy Duchamp, River Phoenix before he passed. He was one of the stars of this film. Yeah. Will Wheaton, we talked about already. Jerry O'Connell played the fat kid Byron. And now he's like, you know, this hunk or whatever.
He is a hunk.
But anyway, I love Stand By Me.
I like the idea. Like, I think, of course, the idea of a simpler time. There's no such thing as a simpler time. But I think when we talk about simpler time, what we mean is childhood, when things seem simpler.
Right.
So a lot of movies play on that time. You know, when things were very, very two-dimensional, black and white, where, you know, the world was good and bad, and you were just out in the woods. And, I mean, I completely understand the nostalgia.
And, I I'm not saying, because I am a progressive dude, and I'm I like, you know, living in the digital age. I mean, I tell Siri to do everything for me. Like, I'm okay with where the world's
Siri,
going.
I need to use the bathroom.
Can you take a dump for me, please? But I like where the world is going.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I'm okay with it. I'm just saying I do like being reminded.
Well, that's how you grew up. What, I mean, we are made by our environment. Right. So when you grow up, that's the world to you.
And this
so I think
is,
that makes sense.
And this is the only movie on my list that's going to do that from a nostalgic factor from when I was a kid. You know, and that's where the tears come from.
I don't have any older movies on there. Not any real old
so
movies.
So that's where the tears come from for me. And, you know, the scenes with John Cusack are very emotional. Yeah, but aside from that, I just get emotional based on the nostalgia piece.
Okay.
And where I was when I saw this at 12 years old.
Dude.
All right, man. So there you go. That's my number five. What's your number five?
My number five, I mean, I remember just loving this movie. I don't know. I doubt it got great reviews. It's kind of a big kind of blockbuster movie. But this movie's all about self-sacrifice. It's a love story, but it's also about saving the world and about the type of sacrifice it takes to, quote, save the world. The name of the movie is Armageddon.
Okay.
Now,
yeah,
Armageddon,
sure.
I mean, it's a very fun movie. It's about Bruce Willis and, what's the other guy's
name?
Ben Affleck. Mm-hmm. They're oilers. Mm-hmm. So they work on this oil rig. They're drillers. So they're, like, I guess you would call it man's man and woman's woman. And they do this very manual labor, and they're good at it. Ben Affleck's in love with, his son. All right. Ben Affleck's in love with Bruce Willis's daughter. So there's that interplay. And they get hired to go out and drill on this meteor that's coming to destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
So they find these guys. They're going to train them, send them up in space to do that. So they end up doing that. They end up ending up on this boulder. And it turns out that someone's going to have to sacrifice themselves to save the world. Mm-hmm. And Ben Affleck volunteers. And he's going. So Bruce Willis has taken Ben Affleck down. And then what happens is Bruce locks Ben in the capsule or in the place and says, "Take care of my daughter."
Yeah.
And goes out and sacrifices himself. So that just every time just brings me to so many tears, because it's about the idea of self-sacrifice and what it means to truly love someone, knowing that my daughter's going to be okay without me. My daughter needs you.
Yeah.
The world needs you. This is what I can do.
Right.
This is all I can do.
I'm a
driller. This is what
I can do. That's a good one. That has a strong following, kind of like low-key following, you know, and there was a period of time, I don't have the year on Armageddon, but there was a period of time about 3 or 4 years when there was a lot of those like disaster movies.
Yeah,
a lot of those like disaster movies coming out. And Armageddon was cool because it did great at the box office.
Yeah.
I mean, it made a lot of money.
Yeah.
But like you said, it was also, there was a lot of emotional human connection stories in it.
Well, it's about this ragtag bunch of, they're real friends. Right. I mean, they're down to earth, they're friends. They have the great, I don't know the actor's name, but there's
Steve Buscemi's in it.
Buscemi's, they're great characters in it. And they're just friends. And of course, there's the love story.
Liv
and there's
Tyler,
the dad. Right. So there's that. And they're just, they're just basically going to do a job.
In the opening scene when he's like getting chased by the
guy.
Yeah,
and they're just going to
making
do a
out
job.
His daughter.
But it ends up that it's the everyday guy who can be the savior of the world. Because, I mean, keep losing his name.
Ben Affleck?
Not Ben Affleck, the dad.
Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis saves the world.
Right.
Through self-sacrifice.
Right.
Through giving himself.
Right.
So that, some reason, that idea just stirs it up in me.
It's cool.
And it builds. The whole movie builds toward this climactic point.
And the Aerosmith tune.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, don't want to miss a thing, brother.
Don't miss a thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it teaches you about what sacrifice is, what it means to be a hero, what it means to really love someone, mm-hmm. to really love someone.
Yeah.
And, I mean, take care of her. I mean, yeah, it's all in that one line, you know. You know, tell her I love her, take care of her.
All right, good pick, man. Oh, Armageddon, dude. Number 5.
Yeah, man.
All right, so I'm going to give real quick a little disclaimer for a spoiler alert because okay. I have a very recent movie on my list next. And is it okay if I talk about it with you or you don't want me to?
No, you talk about it. Just
okay,
talk.
All right, because I don't want to spoil it for you or whatever. But I have to kind of talk about it to explain why I cry because of what happens. But my number 4 is from last year, 2018. It's a film called A Star Is Born.
Oh, I've seen it.
Okay, so you've seen it, right? Okay. So there will be spoilers. Oh, there will be spoilers for the section. Just
man,
so
that's a heart-wrenching
Everyone
movie.
Knows. If you haven't seen A Star Is Born, please fast forward a couple minutes. So, I mean, obviously, okay, I was connected to this movie immediately because this is a movie told through music.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
it's a very much a musical narrative throughout this film because Jackson Maine, portrayed by Bradley Cooper, who's also the director here, mm-hmm. is a musician. He's a country musician who's kind of fading in his career. Yeah.
He's famous. And he's okay with being famous, but he's kind of like that. He's, you know, this is just who I am. Right. I write music. Right. I'm just a singer. Yeah.
And, you know, and this happens, of course. Yeah. But, I mean, he's one of those musicians that's very successful, but he's already reached his peak.
Yeah.
So now he's on the way down from the peak.
He's also a struggling alcoholic.
Yeah.
He's losing his hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So not there's spoilers a lot of, for everyone.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's why I said there's going to be spoilers for this recent film here. But anyway, it's a very tragic, kind of what you would see in a rock and roll biopic story, sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of story.
Yeah.
And then he meets Allie, portrayed by Lady Gaga, who gave one of the best performances of the year last year, I believe. I put her in my top 5 performances of the year last year, and she was nominated for an Academy Award for this. And she is a waitress who can sing. Yeah. She has a great talent for singing. She sings in, you know, low-level nightclubs and stuff around town. And
clubs. She sings in
drag clubs.
She's very popular in a drag club.
And he kind of discovers her inadvertently.
Stumbles into this club to get a drink.
And this is obviously a remake.
Falls in love,
This has been remade 3 or 4 times, but this is a very, very dark rendition of A Star Is Born. Yeah. And they end up falling in love. Yeah. And I believe the love story. And what's happening at the same time in synchronicity with them falling in love is her rise to fame
and his
as a pop star.
Decline.
And his decline to, well, from fame, but also decline into alcoholism and rehab. And,
so there's that battle right there. Yeah.
Right. And the movie ends. And like I said, this is definitely the darkest iteration of this movie. Spoilers, guys. Spoilers. This movie ends with Jackson. He can't take it anymore. He commits suicide, and he's pushed over the edge to do that by a guy that plays her agent, Allie's agent, because he convinces Jackson Maine that he's the reason, or he's holding her back from her career.
Basically, she
You're
loves
done,
you.
Bro.
Like, she loves you, but you are the reason she will never be what she can
be. And he buys
into
that.
And this is at a point where he's sobered up for probably a couple weeks now.
Right, he's out of rehab.
He's trying to do... Yeah, you're right. He's out of... So maybe a couple months. He's trying to do the best he can. She just loves him. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's like he has embarrassed the crap out of her, you know, with his drunken, you know... debauchery. Yeah, basically he says, you know, she'll never be anything with you.
Right.
And so to basically because he loves her, he says, I'm not gonna drag her into this.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, and then so that happens, he kills himself, which obviously is a very sad
out of the
thing
blue
to begin
because
with.
You're kind of taken aback by it because you're like, what?
There's a couple things in this movie leading that's sad.
Yeah.
That's sad. That got me. Okay. That wrecked me. But there's a couple things leading up to that. And this is a remake, and that didn't happen in the previous iterations of this movie or in the original script for this movie that it's based on. So it's weird because there's like an ominous kind of cloud over him, even when he's gone through rehab, and you think something like that might happen, but you kind of tell yourself, oh no, they'll probably just break up or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it kind of really hits you. It's a gut punch, almost like you knew the guy. And you like if a close friend of yours did that, it's almost like how you felt.
That's a good way of looking at his performance in this. It's like you know him.
Mm-hmm.
He does such a good job because you just fall
in
love
with him. Bro, one time, that was sad, but one time that I well up, and I've seen it a couple times since when I saw it in the theater, and I can't not cry every time I see it. Sam Elliott, his older brother, is so powerful in this role, man. And there's a scene
because he loves him. Yeah.
He picks him up from, I think his wife got out of rehab, and he takes him home in his truck. And Bradley Cooper's getting out of the truck and he says, look, man, you know, you were my hero. You know, dad wasn't our hero, my hero. You yeah. were my hero. I wanted to be you.
Yeah.
You know, and then he leaves.
Thanks for the ride. Sure thing, Jack. Hey, you know, when I, when I said I would, you know, when I, took your voice, you know. It was you I idolized, it wasn't Dad.
And there's a quick 30-second scene of Sam Elliott backing out of the driveway and he's welling up.
Yeah.
And
because Sam Elliott blames the father because basically he's like, you know, dad made you are his drinking buddy.
Right.
And he'll never forgive his dad for that. Mm-hmm. Sam Elliott will never forgive the father for basically making him into him. Like you are him. Like you are our father. You have this disease that he brought upon you.
And the last thing I'll say is at the very end, after he did that, after Jackson does that and Allie finds out and she performs at like kind of a tribute show, I want to say like a year later, or something like that, and she performs I'll Never Love Again is the name of the song, and it's about him and her continued love for him, and that's her soulmate, and it shows kind of flashbacks of their good times together
even in the darkness. That's tough, even in the dark, even in the dark, and she says even in the darkness he was my man and I was his, you know, like even through the dark times.
So talk about a tearjerker, bro. I mean, there's different, you know, moments sprinkled throughout the movie because it's powerful because it's based in music and these songs are powerful, you know, and Lady Gaga can fucking sing, bro. Man. Like she can get you with her notes. And so that happens. And then the ending, it just wrecked me. So I saw this with my daughter and Charlotte in the theater and we're both just, you know, crying, you know, and I've seen it a couple times since and I still tear up. So that's my number four. Woo. Star is Born from 2018. What are we doing, man? We're up to your number three.
Number four.
I don't want to cry as much as you're going to make me. So you're number four.
Well, my number four is the third movie in a trilogy that has become a quadrilogy now. But the ending of this movie is their entire relationship. You have these characters who grow to be a family over these three movies. They've been through so much together. And in this third movie, they've gone through all these trials and tribulations, and finally we come to the final scene. They fought, and now they are facing their death. I'm not going to tell you the name yet because I want to get beyond just the look of this movie and what it seems like it is, but this is what it could be. So they're all facing their death, and the friends reach out and grab each other's hands. Mm-hmm. And there's this one character who's trying to get away, and then his best friend just reaches his hand out and says, "Here, man, let's do this together." So they resolve to die together. Death is a very, very important and emotional topic for me because I think, especially in my life, death is something that haunts us all. It's not just the end of life, it's the end of anything. Mm-hmm. Everything's temporary. And when you have this dying with grace and dignity with a friendship, it just brings it that much closer. The movie is Toy Story 3. And the reason I didn't say it first was because, Toy Story 3? But no.
Mm-mm.
After three Toy Stories, you are in love with Buzz and Woody and these characters. They are friends of yours. They are friends and family of each other.
Let me just say something real quick, and then I want you to carry on. This is your number four. It's my number three. Same movie.
Yeah.
Really, you could pick any Toy Story, including Toy Story 4. But Toy Story 3 is also the one I picked. But go ahead.
But I'll talk about it after. So they're fighting. They've lost their Andy, which is their, you know, their owner, their, you know, the boy they're making happy. So now they're trying to figure out what's going on with their life. Mm. Like, do we go to this school and become just play toys? Do we find a new home? Mm. So they're fighting. They end up in this terrible situation. They're fighting. They're in a dump, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're at the edge of the dump, they're sinking deeper and deeper toward the fire that's going to burn them all. Mm-hmm. And they just can't get out. And so they reach out and take each other's hands. Mm-hmm. And Woody is still trying to get out. And he looks back at Buzz, and Buzz just reaches out his hand and like, let's do this together. You know, this is another adventure that we're going to go through together. And it's okay. Even in death, it's okay because we're together.
Well, that's your number four. That's your number four. So I'll piggyback on you because it's my number three, which is
Damn.
I, you know, First of all, Pixar does it, man. I mean, they.
I cry in The Incredibles.
Me too. I mean, I could have put Inside Out on here when Bing Bong. Have you seen Inside Out?
Yes.
When the imaginary friend kind of vanishes from her mind. I mean, Wally when he leaves. I mean, Pixar does it, and they like to in Monsters Inc. when Boo has to say goodbye to Sully. I mean, they love to do that, where it makes kids feel, which is hard to do at 5, 6, 7 years old. I mean, they don't care about anything; they just want to play. You know. But as us as adults, we have a much more deeper connection to it because we've lived our lives or we're in the middle of living our lives.
Or toward the end like you.
Or in the twilight like me. But Toy Story 3, to your point, and you're talking about the scene when they're in the inferno at the garbage dump or whatever, and they're all kind of sliding down to their fate, but they're doing it together.
Together.
And it's like, hey.
And they let go.
We started together. We're going to end together. Woo! And we're not okay, but it's like, this is it, you know. Yeah. And if it's going to happen, I'm with you guys.
Oh, shit.
But another thing about that, when you think you recovered from that, you know, remember the alien claw comes down and saves
them.
They save them. You think you've recovered from that emotionally, and then Andy has to give his toys to Bonnie, and he has to say goodbye to Woody. Namely, Woody.
Because he tells Bonnie about each of them. This one's great. This one's Dr. Porkchop. This one's Buzz Lightyear. Yeah, he's the best. He goes, this is Woody. Yeah. And the thing about Woody is, what does he say? The thing about Woody is he'll be there for you always.
Right. So he is describing the emotional comfort that he got from these toys for 18 years. Or however long
and saying
had
goodbye. It's a movie about saying goodbye.
You know, it was always a little funny. Me and my wife actually have kind of had a running joke because it's kind of funny if you step back and you think about it, because it's like no 18-year-old college kid cares about his toy. I mean, if you think about it, I'm not saying no one does, but generally speaking, but that's the thing, is that this franchise created that connection with the toys with each other, but also with Andy to his toys, that we do believe it.
Yeah.
And we do believe that it's hard for him to let go of these things. And, you know, I think it's good that he didn't take him to college. That would have been a weird sequel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would have been tough for him. Yeah. He'd have been getting bullied. But, you know, he gave him to Bonnie. That story plays out in Toy Story 4. Have you seen that yet?
I don't want
to
see it.
You know,
I have no desire.
That is so funny.
I have no desire.
Listen to this now.
Because 3 ended perfectly. It's about saying goodbye.
Now, listen to this. I'm going to tell you something real quick.
Don't convince me.
I'm going to tell you something real quick. I'm not going to try to convince you. It's just so funny that you said that, because I had a guest on yesterday. We did top 5 Disney songs.
Okay.
And we talked about Toy Story.
Randy Newman, I bet, was 4 of them.
It was on mine. Yeah. But we talk about the Toy Story franchise in general. And he's a Disney fanatic. Okay. Not saying that you're not, but he's a Disney fanatic, and he doesn't want to see Toy Story 4. He thinks that was a perfect trilogy.
Perfect.
And what we're talking about right now, from an emotional standpoint, the whole Toy Story franchise through the first 3 had been about Andy and his toys.
Exactly.
So now what an obstacle they had to overcome, and frankly they did. I know you don't want to hear that, and he didn't either, but they did an amazing job.
I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's great.
They had to start a new chapter with Bonnie in that Andy role.
Yeah.
And they do. Yeah. And it's amazing.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure it's perfect. I'm sure it is.
And it's another tearjerker. Yeah. I mean, the end of this movie is just as emotional of Toy Story 4. I mean, I would have been happy for the rest of my life if it ended after 3.
Okay.
That would have been, it would have gone down as one of the greatest trilogies. And it still does, really.
Not only animated, but one of the greatest trilogies.
Absolutely.
Of all time.
Yeah. Cinematic trilogies of all time. And it still is.
Yeah.
In fact, I was going to ask you if you want to do, you know, top 5 trilogies. I mean, that, even
let's
though
see,
4.
Done. I've already got 3 of them.
Even though 4.
I've already got 3 of them. I've already got 4.
Even though 4.
5. I got them all 5. I'm done.
You're done. You're ready. Even though 4 is out and it was a great movie, that's still a trilogy. Yeah. Because, like I said, it's the Andy chapter.
It's the Andy chapter.
Yeah. And that chapter ends at the end of 3. Very emotional, man. We match up there. Yeah.
More thing about it. The great thing, I mean, we are storytellers. Human beings are storytellers. That's how we share information. That's how we share our experience. When I come over, you say how you've been, I'm going to tell you a story about what's happened in the last few weeks of my life. The great thing about what these kids, quote, kids movies do is they're telling stories, and through stories, they're talking about themes such as death, love,
especially
friendship. So kids are being opened up to this reality. There's no more greater reality over us and surrounding the human condition than death and temporality. Right. But they are being able to share that on a child's level and tell them the story. So they're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe it is okay to die if you die with your friends. Right. Shit. I mean, how can it be so? I just love, the reason I had to put Toy Story on this list is because it shows that even at this level, you can communicate these very real emotions. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is a very emotional.
They did a great job.
The reason I chose part three, I could have put any of them, including four.
Absolutely.
But the reason I put three on here is because it's just emotional, because it feels like the end of that story. And we thought it was going to be.
I mean, it ends with Andy driving away.
But, we, you know, right.
Yeah.
And you feel like that is, I've known these, it came out in 95, the original.
Yeah.
So you feel like I've known these toys for
15 years. 15 years.
They've been my toys. You know, they've been what's comforted me just as much as they comforted Andy in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's it. They're gone. So that's an emotional send-off.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion. You know, Toy Story 2, the scene when Jessie's reflecting on her owner, and it plays When You Loved Me.
Yes.
You know, that's very emotional.
Tell me how important Andy is. Well, she was important too. They all grow up. Right. They all say goodbye.
So Toy Story in general, and really Pixar in general, just invoke tears.
The song that plays during that scene, I think it's Sarah McLachlan, is just a, When Somebody Loved You.
When Somebody Loved You.
When somebody loved me. But that's a great scene. So my number three. So we need to hear
more.
We're
up to your number three.
My number three. Now, my number three, from beginning to end, this movie is thick with emotion and cinematography and beauty and tragedy. The movie is Moulin Rouge. It's one of my it's one of my wife and I's favorite movies of all time. Your song, not sung by Elton John, sung by Ewan McGregor, was the song my wife and I danced to at our wedding.
You can tell everybody that this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is now you're in the world. Sat on the
From the very beginning, you meet this character, Ewan McGregor's character, the writer, and the first thing he says, the woman I love is dead.
Right.
It grabs you from the beginning. You're like, okay. And then it sinks in and takes you through this tragedy, this tragic love story. It's very Romeo and Juliet, which is interesting because the filmmaker did Romeo and Juliet.
He did,
same style. It's very, it takes you through that love story, that tragedy, and they build it up like they're not going to be together. They're going to be together. They're not going to be together. They're going to be together. Finally, they're not going to be together. I've paid my whore. I'm leaving you alone. You can be with the Duke. You can be an actress. You know, fuck you. I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. I'm done with you. I mean, he shows up during the show and throws the money down and says, here, I've paid my whore, and walks out. And then she's, oh, I'm going to get emotional. She sings the song that finally brings them together. Mm-hmm. The show climaxes. It ends. Everyone's cheering. The Moulin Rouge is a success. Mm-hmm. The Duke is walking away. Everything's going to be okay. She takes one last breath, and she dies.
Yeah. You know, this is one.
And they're all stuck there, and she is in his arms.
And we talked about,
and they're all just looking like, what do we do now?
Right.
She's gone.
And we talked about, we talked about this from my perspective with The Star Is Born earlier, but this is another one that's told through music.
Mm-hmm.
And music is a very impactful way to get a message across.
He's a writer, and they're writing it together.
Right.
They're writing their love story.
Right. And this is legit a musical, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, a lot of great music, and I haven't seen that really since it came out. But Baz Luhrmann is a director.
Yeah, he did another one. Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge, and there was another one he did.
Great Gatsby.
Okay.
The Gatsby with Leonardo DiCaprio.
But man, he's just amazing.
He actually has an Elvis biopic coming out next year.
Really?
He's going to be doing, it's going to be kind of like a musical based
on
Elvis.
I bet that's going to be good.
But yeah, no, that's a good movie. I just haven't seen it so long. But I know that the music is so powerful that I do remember it being emotional.
Yeah.
So good pick.
And also, really quickly, like, the story is him writing the story. It starts off, she's dead, and he's writing the story. And when at the end, he is, quote, healed. Now, he hasn't healed. You never heal from something like that. But through writing the story, through telling the story, he has moved through the tragedy. He has mourned. So the whole movie is the writer's mourning process of coming to grips with what has happened.
Right.
So Moulin Rouge, from beginning to end, like, I tear up at the beginning, I get, and then it releases at the end. It's just the whole movie is a tear jerker.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I'm a similar situation with my number two.
Number two!
So my runner-up is the only... Let me make sure, actually.
Let's make sure. Gerald, don't lead us astray. Don't
this is the only,
jerk us around.
This is the only movie on this list that is also in my top 10 movies of all time.
No way!
So I don't remember where I put it, like 6 or 7 probably, but it's one of my literally top 10 movies of all time. I've seen it probably 30 times. I love it. I own it. One of the greatest acting performances of a gone too soon artist is from, let me just name it and then we can talk about it. It's from 1997, a film called Good Will Hunting.
Ding, 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 ding. That's my number two.
There you go.
So we match up.
We match up again.
Woo! That is a great movie.
Let me talk about it real quick. Yeah, go ahead. Then since it's your two, I'll let you
try not to jump on you. I'm so excited.
Carry on the conversation. Yeah. But, you know, the reason, and, you know, I talked to someone online the other day because it got some mentions on Twitter. And they mentioned the scene, and I, by the way, I was talking about Robin Williams, just an amazing performer, his best performance.
Yep.
This and the Genie from Aladdin are two just on another level performances for his career. But he won the Academy Award for it. Yeah. But a lot of people will reflect back on the scene where he makes a breakthrough with Will, because you know he plays Will's therapist. Yeah. And you know Will's dealing with abuse in his past, and it's that, you know, it's not your fault. Scene. Yeah. And he backs him into the corner and he gets him to face that and come to terms with it.
The whole
movie. Let me say real quick though, because I know you probably want to talk about this scene. That scene is emotional.
Yeah.
Now, what gets me personally in this movie a little bit more than that storyline is the friendship between him and Chucky. And there's a montage that Ben Affleck has, who I'll just go ahead and tell you, he's not my favorite actor in the world, but I fucking love him in this movie.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon, to be honest with you. I'm not saying I dislike those guys, but friendship these is real. The characters that I just fell in love with these two guys at. Yeah. And in my opinion, they haven't topped this movie from an acting perspective. So there's a montage that they have on the work site, you know, because they work in like construction or whatever.
Yeah, because Ben Affleck is like, are you going to get a job? Like, basically, what's going to happen with it? Like, you've been in therapy. They've been throwing these jobs at you. What are you going to do?
Right.
Like, so what is it going to pay off or what?
Right. And he says to him, and he has this little like lecture, basically.
Well, because Matt Damon says, I'm not going to say that. You know, I thought we could keep, because they're at a construction site knocking shit down. They're hitting bricks. Said, okay, no, we'll grow old together. We'll take our kids to Little League. That's what we'll do. And then what's Ben Affleck?
And then Ben Affleck, you know, I don't know the exact quote, but he's just like, look, man, if you're bringing your kids over to my house to watch football, I'm going to fucking kick your ass.
Yes. No, I mean, that's a promise. Yeah. I'll kill you.
Like
you're here in the slums of South Boston?
And then he has this beautiful thing where he's like, you want to know what the best part of my day is?
Best part of my
day? Is when I come over to pick you up and I walk up to your door to knock on the door.
The first
5 seconds I knock on your door, I think you won't be there. Because you went and you fucking did something with your life. I don't know a lot, but I know that.
I want a way out of here for it. I mean, I'm going to fucking live here the rest of my life. You know, be neighbors, you know, we'll have little kids, fucking take them a little league together up Foley Field. Look, you're my best friend, so don't take this the wrong way. In 20 years, if you're still living here, coming over to my house to watch the Patriots game, still working construction, I'll fucking kill you. That's not a threat. What? That's a fact. I'll fucking kill you.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Look, you got something none of us
have. Oh, come on. Why is it always this? I mean, I fucking owe it to myself to do this or that. What if I don't want to?
No. Fuck you. You don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me. Because tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'll be 50. And I'll still be doing this shit. That's all right. That's fine. I mean, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. You're too much of a pussy to cash it in. And that's bullshit. Because I'd do fucking anything to have what you got. So would any of these fucking guys. It'd be an insult to us if you're still here in 20 years. Hanging around here is a fucking waste of your time.
You don't know that.
I don't?
No, you don't know that.
Oh, I don't know that. Let me tell you what I do. Every day I come by your house and I pick you up. We go out, we have a few drinks and a few laughs, and it's great. You know what the best part of my day is? For about 10 seconds from when I pull up to the curb and when I get to your door. Because I think maybe I'll get up there and I'll knock on the door and you won't be there. No goodbye, no see you later, no nothing. Just left. I don't know much, but I know that.
That's the best part of my day. Matt Damon says, you got to get over this thing. Like, I owe myself because I have this genius of talent. And Ben Affleck says, no, fuck you. You owe me.
Right.
Because any of our, they have a group of like, what, four of them?
Yeah, Casey Affleck's in there.
Any of us would kill to have what you have.
Right.
You have a ticket out. And if you don't use that ticket.
And then how's the movie end, bro?
Oh.
Or right before the end when Ben Affleck goes to pick him up, he's not there.
He's not there.
And Ben Affleck gets emotional.
I went to see a girl.
And he steps back. He steps back and he's like, wow, you know, this
is gone.
And you can see the sadness, yes, but you can see the happiness that, okay, he listened to me. He's going to do something.
My friend got out.
You know? And Ben Affleck kind of gets welled up there, and I do too. I mean, it's an emotional movie. Now, the Robin Williams stuff, man, this is just a power. This is literally, they should play this in film class for actors. This is a powerhouse acting clinic by Robin Williams.
Absolutely.
In this movie. I mean, this is how you, because we know Robin Williams. Now, we were talking about the genie, for example. We know him as in high energy, just off the wall, amazing comedian that just can't stay in his lane.
He can't stay still.
He's crazy. Yeah. You know, he's a wild comedian.
Yeah, we love him. We love
him. And this is such a in-the-box, structured, subdued performance.
He's sad.
And his wife is dealing with loss. And, I mean, it's just so good.
He's teaching at a community college. He's giving up everything for his dead wife. But let's talk about real quick.
Go ahead. So it's your number two.
Let's talk about Matt Damon's arc here. Mm-hmm. He is a genius. And there's a great, I mean, talk about this. We could say every scene is great, because every scene is great. He's telling his, quote, then-girlfriend-type girlfriend about it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what, do you have a photographic memory? What, I mean, what's the deal with you? I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. He goes, okay, can you play piano? No, seriously, can you play? He goes, no, well, I can't play piano either. You know, I look at the piano, I see a bunch of keys and wood. I have no idea. But Mozart, he could look at a piano. Mm-hmm. He just understood it. He could just play. When it comes to this stuff, I could always just play. Right. And he's talking about mathematics. Mm-hmm. He is a genius. He is. But he's blocked. He grew up in these homes, going from home to home to home to home, having the crap beat out of him. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one scene where Robin Williams, you know, he's like, well, do you have any experience with that? And Robin's like, yeah, you know, my dad used to come home and beat on my mom, so I would piss him off on purpose so he'd beat on me. And Matt Damon says, yeah, my foster dad would just come in, put a belt and a wrench on the bed, right, and said, pick one. He goes, well, I got to go with the belt. And Matt Damon says, nah, the wrench. Why? Because fuck him. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
So he has the crap beat out of him his whole life. So he's protected. Right. And he surrounded himself with these friends who are his only family. And Robin Williams is kind of helping him on with that. Mm-hmm. And it comes to this iconic scene you were talking about. The first scene is them on the bench in the park. Mm-hmm. The first of these iconic scenes of their interplay.
The taster's choice moment, he calls
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And Robin Williams says, you know what? If you don't want to do this, that's fine. Because, you know, you came into my room and you know nothing about me. And you looked around, you saw a painting, you saw some books, and you tore my life apart. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. That's okay, because I don't care. You're just a little kid. You don't know shit. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you about life. Like, you might have read these books, but you haven't been in war. You haven't been in love. And, oh, I can't even say it. Mm-hmm. He's going on the thing. Mm-hmm. But basically he says, I'm in. I want to know you. I know nothing about you. I'm in, if you want to get to know me. So they create this bond, and then it builds up to that iconic scene you were talking about, where basically says, you know, I want you to know it's not your fault.
Right.
And he finally breaks down. Matt Damon has this wall up, and he finally breaks
it. Yep, and you can see it.
And you can see it.
And it happens
right there.
On screen, right? And there's
also a breakthrough. It's just beautiful. And you can feel it. You can feel him being vulnerable for the first time.
And we'll move on to our number ones in a second. But another scene I want to mention in that's also very, very powerful, that also tells the tale of his upbringing, because we don't really see any of the violence from his childhood. It's just referred to.
We see the pictures, though.
Yeah, and the pictures. But there's a scene in that movie, too, with Minnie Driver, who's his girlfriend or his love interest in the movie.
He's been lying to her.
And he's, you know,
I got these 12 brothers and sisters.
He comes clean,
family.
And he's like, you don't want to hear my story. No. You know, you don't want to hear how I had fucking cigarettes put out on me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to hear that? And
you don't
she starts breaking
shit.
Down because she realizes, like, oh, shit, you know, this
You're
guy's been
up.
Through some stuff, you know. It's just, the story of his background is emotional. Robin Williams' performance is very powerful. I thought this is, if not one of, it's the best that Ben Affleck's done from a dramatic acting standpoint. You just believed his Chucky character. Great, hilarious supporting roles by Casey Affleck.
The other guy who's in Dazed and Confused.
He is. I can't remember his name, but he's hilarious in it. And then you have the
that
Boston accent.
You believe in that friendship.
Matt
Damon's messed up. He's angry and he just wants to. So they pass these kids, because I had that kid used to beat me up in kindergarten. So it's like, okay, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to go out and beat him up. And all the guys in the car are like, yep, let's do it.
Yep.
Because that's this friendship.
His buddy, Casey Affleck, doesn't want to eat his burger.
We got snacks now. Like, come on,
I'm going to put your fucking burger on layaway.
Not because he's afraid to fight, but he says, dude, if we were going to fight him, we should have fought him back in the park. We got snacks now.
Yeah. Ben Affleck does that little thing where I'm going to put your burger up here on the dash.
Give me your 5 cents.
I'll put it on layaway.
And then
end of the week, you get your
sandwich. That's but the thing about Minnie Driver, he doesn't want to let her in. He has this another iconic scene with Robin Williams. He goes, you know, I don't want to know about her because right now she's perfect. I don't want to mess that up. Right. And then Robin Williams says, well, maybe right now you're perfect and you don't want to mess that up. Right. And then he gives him the line. Let me tell you something about this girl. She's not perfect. Mm-hmm. And you're not either. But that's not the question. The question of love is whether you're perfect for each other.
Right.
Woo! Right. I mean, yeah, that's a good
one. It's a good one. So that's
my number two as well.
Number two. So match up there. So let's give you my number one, right? Or did you go first?
I went first. So I need it.
All right.
I
so my number Daddy. One. I need it. We're talking about Robin Williams' performance, and this is just as powerful. It's based on the performance of Tom Hanks in this movie that it's going to be my number one. Oh. Is Philadelphia from 1993.
I've never seen Philadelphia.
I'll tell you real quick. I mean, Philadelphia, Tom Hanks portrays Andrew Beckett, who in this is in the late 80s.
Yeah, he has AIDS.
And he discovers he has HIV and contracts AIDS. And it's a story about that, but it's also a story about him trying to win a case because he's in a law firm. Okay. He's a lawyer. And the partners in his law firm basically fired him wrongfully because they found out he was gay and that he had AIDS. And of course, in the 80s, everybody was scared. They didn't know how you could get it they even talk about that in the movie. They're afraid if they shake hands or if he sneezes in the same room, they'll get AIDS. You know, it was very, very, they were ignorant what was going on with it in the mid to late 80s. And this was when that was occurring. So the bulk of the movie is the court case and him battling for justice. Mm-hmm. Denzel Washington, who plays a homophobic attorney in the movie, ends up becoming his lawyer. And he shares a lot of the same views that these partners share, where he doesn't really want to be alone with them because he shakes his hand, then he finds out he has AIDS and he's like freaked out and he goes to wash his hands. Yeah. And he's homophobic. And he plays that character very well. And over the course of the movie, they form an unlikely bond. And he kind of gets over that prejudice throughout the course of the movie. There's a scene in this movie, bro, where Tom Hanks, look it up on YouTube. Okay. It's only a few minutes long. So if you don't.
And tell me one more time who plays the lawyer.
Denzel Washington.
Okay.
And he was also nominated for this. He may have won. But so Jonathan Demme Pitcher, there's a scene in this, bro. Look it up on YouTube where Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington are alone in his apartment. Okay. And they're preparing for the next morning in court. Mm-hmm. And Denzel's going over the questions that he's going to give him. You know, they're having like a rehearsal
This is what they're going to ask you.
Yeah.
This is what they're going to ask
you. And he's like, you know, these are the questions you're going to get. They're playing, doing a role play type thing. And Tom Hanks is kind of distant from that. And he's like not really wanting to answer the questions. And he just kind of starts talking to Denzel about life. And he's like, there's music playing. And it's an opera singer named Maria Callas.
Okay.
A very tragic, by the way, it was purposeful. She was put in the scene. She's a very tragic figure herself if you look up her history. But he's like, do you hear that? And he's like turning it up and he starts, it's in Italian because it's an opera. It's just you don't know what she's saying, or at least I don't, because I don't speak Italian. But it's just a very powerful voice coming through the speakers. Tom Hanks gets up. He's holding the bag with
colostomy?
Bag. No, but he's carrying the
medicine bag.
And it's on a roller. He carries it over there. He turns the radio up. Bag. He turns the radio up, and you hear her singing through the speakers, and Denzel's just watching him. And the cinematography is great because it changes color to like this really kind of like deep red, almost like blood red comes over Tom Hanks's face. And he's in English telling us what she's saying. Yeah. And he's just telling Denzel the story of the song. And how she's tragic and how she's lost everyone she loves and she feels like she's alone in this world. And, you know, he's like, do you hear it? Do you hear the pain in her voice? And you do. You literally hear what he's telling you that she's experiencing in the song.
Do you mind this music? Do you like opera?
I am not that familiar with opera, Andrew.
Oh, this is my favorite aria. It's Maria Callas. It's Andrea Chenier. Umberto Giordano. This is Maddalena. She's saying how during the French Revolution, a mob set fire to her house. And her mother died. Saving her. She said, look, the place that cradled me is burning. Do you hear the heartache in her voice? Can you feel it, Joe? Now, in come the strings and it changes everything. Like the music, it fills with a hope. And that'll change again, listen. Listen. I bring sorrow to those who love me.
Oh, that single cello.
During this sorrow that love came to me. A voice filled with harmony that said, live still. I am life. Heaven is in your arms.
Tom Hanks is just engulfed in it. They show a shot of a close-up of Denzel, and he's crying. You know, this guy that was cynical and that was, like, very, very distant from this character, and the connection through that, again, through music.
Yeah.
Through that song, that one scene, bro. I mean, you could literally put up on YouTube right now and have no context of the movie and just watch that scene, you'd cry. I mean, based on Tom Hanks's, like, he is just in that scene.
Oh.
And the end of this movie... is spoiler alert, sorry, but you can imagine being infected with AIDS, but he dies at the end of the film. And the end of this movie is a montage of him at his funeral. They're playing a video of all of home videos of him as a kid, and it's playing over a Neil Young tune about growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so sad, man. I mean, it the song plays, it shows all his friends and family at the funeral, and the movie ends with clips of him growing up. And this is a life that is now lost to this tragic disease. And you get a sense of that you had been there, you know, like his parents,
yeah,
through his whole life, and that you're just sad to let him go, you yeah know, as a viewer of this movie that you've been watching for a couple hours. And it's just very powerful, man. And kind of the ignorance that surrounded HIV and AIDS, yeah, in the 80s is a sad thing anyway, you know. And this really brought it to the forefront. I mean, Tom Hanks very famously cried during his Oscar speech for this. And just, you know, thanked the gay community and thanked, you know, HIV and AIDS awareness and folks that he worked with during the making of this movie. He was very affected by it, you could imagine. And it's just a powerful, emotional, deep story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's deep, man. But Philadelphia is one of my favorite movies from the 90s. Also, Streets of Philadelphia by Bruce Springsteen.
Yes, I know, yes.
Opens this movie, and that's a great tune as well. Man. So that's my number one, man.
Man.
You need to check it out.
Killed it.
You will be crying, though.
Yeah.
But you need to check it out. Number one, Philadelphia. What do you got?
All right. When you asked me, when you mentioned, let's do the movies that bring you to tears, let's do the tearjerker movies, this is the only movie that came to mind. It's the first movie that came to mind, and when I say it, I doubt it's on anybody's list. It is an epic film by Ridley Scott. Epic from beginning to end. From the first, one of the best performances by Russell Crowe ever. One of the best performances by an actor ever. He plays this hero, this Roman general, who gets thrown into slavery. The movie is Gladiator.
Yeah.
And the entire movie, like, he starts off as this general, and you can tell from the very beginning, he's loved and respected, and he's just a good person. And all he wants to do is go home.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he wants to do. Now, remember that. That's the theme. I just want to go home. Caesar, Marcus Aurelius, the Caesar of Rome, comes to him and says, you know, what would Rome's greatest general have of me? Let me go home. He goes, okay, I'm going to let you go home after this. I'm dying.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to be the new Caesar. And all I want you to do is give Rome back to the people. It's going to become a republic. The son finds out, Marcus Aurelius' son, best villain of all time.
Yeah, we talked about him before on the movie Villains.
Kills his dad, takes over the Caesarship, and then is rebuffed by Russell Crowe. And then that's why he has Russell Crowe's family killed. And Russell Crowe ends up in the desert and becomes a slave and then becomes a gladiator. Fights his way back into Rome, only to take on the emperor, become the symbol to take on the emperor. The whole time just praying, I want to go home. I want to go home. I'm going to get back to my family someday. In this battle at the end, he fights him. And this is where it all culminates. You know, the emperor at the time, Joaquin Phoenix, you know, has Russell Crowe chained up because, you know, you become a gladiator, you become a model, a hero. And what else to do now but to fight me in the arena? Mm-hmm. Stabs him in the chest, says, cover up the wound, and takes him out to fight him. Before he says that, he goes, Russell Crowe says, You would be willing to fight me? He goes, why? Do you think I'm afraid? I think you've been afraid your whole life.
Right. And now, when what other episode did we talk about Gladiator? Do you remember?
The greatest villains.
Right. Joaquin Movie villains.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
But then it comes, okay, so I think you've been afraid your whole life. Aren't you afraid to die? A friend of mine once told me that death smiles at us all. The best we can do is smile back.
Yeah.
Well, did your friend smile at his own death? Tell me he was your father. So deep, then they go out. So I'm building this up. Then they go out. Russell Crowe is bleeding to death, but still fighting him. Finally takes him. And of course, you know, he throws his sword away. Joaquin doesn't have a sword. Asks one of the centurions for the sword. He says, nope, you can't have it. You chose to fight him. You're going to.
Right.
And the whole time, they're cutting best death scene ever in a movie of all time. They're cutting back and forth between reality and what the Romans call Elysium, the land of the dead. He sees it. He sees the fields. Mm-hmm. He sees his family.
Remember
he sees
that.
His wife and his kid.
Right.
He's coming back and forth. He comes back just in time to kill Joaquin. And right when he falls, he tells the woman, Joaquin's sister, you know, release the prisoners. Rome is to be a republic. I can't even say it. That was the last wish of a dying man. And then he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
And he's with his family.
Yeah.
And he's back with his family.
And you see him walking through the fields toward his son.
Yep. You know what? I'm going to tell you, man.
I love when we have these chats.
I mean, obviously for several reasons, but I never, ever in a million years would have thought about Gladiator for a tearjerker list. I just wouldn't have. But I mean, it's emotional, man.
Yes.
The story is emotional. And
these things
you're
get
right.
Me. Epic movies get me. Mythology gets me. Heroes and self-sacrifice get me.
Yep.
Families and death. This has everything in it. The best hero, the best villain coming together, right, just trying to get home. All he wants to do is get home.
It's awesome, man. It's awesome. We named it on our movie villains list. It's on our tearjerker list.
It's a
great film.
Also,
it was an Oscar winner.
Probably
as well.
My top five favorite movies of all time.
Awesome.
Gladiator.
It's an Oscar winner. It's a great pick, buddy.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll tell you what, I'm going to wrap up my top five and then you can wrap yours up. So my number five was Stand By Me from 1986. My number four was the very recent film A Star Is Born from last year.
Yes.
Number three, we matched up on Toy Story 3.
Nice.
My number two was Good Will Hunting from 1997. We also matched up. And my number one tearjerker is Philadelphia, starring Tom Hanks from 1993. What was your top five?
Let's see if I can remember it. Goodness gracious. Number five was Armageddon. Number four was Toy Story 3. Number three was Moulin Rouge. Number two was Good Will Hunting. Ding, 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 ding. And number one, Gladiator.
There it is. That's our top five tearjerkers, guys. Nice little mix there. A couple crossovers, but not too much. All right, so we're going to give some honorable mentions. I'll round out my top 10 real quick, which I love to do.
Let's do it.
So my number six would have been a movie called A Perfect World. Have you ever seen that?
No, I have not.
It's a rare gem. It's a deep cut. It came out in 1993. It's actually a Clint Eastwood film, and Clint Eastwood stars in it with Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
And it's a film. Kevin Costner plays Butch, and he is a convict that just escaped from jail. And in order to stay on the run, he takes a little boy hostage. And the boy's maybe 8 years old. His name's Philip in the movie. And he's on the run with this kid as his hostage. And it's a Florence Nightingale type thing. They become close. And you find out this little boy never had a father. You find out he's Jehovah's Witness, so he can't ride roller coasters and eat candy and do all that stuff. So Kevin Costner does all that stuff for him. So they become really tight. He takes him trick-or-treating, which he can never do. And they just develop this really beautiful friendship. He's a father figure to this little boy. And Clint Eastwood is a Texas Ranger that's with Laura Dern. They're trying to track him. They're trying to catch him. And at the end of the movie, they do. And Kevin Costner ends up getting taken down because they think he's a danger to the kid.
Yeah.
And the kid loves him. And he's like, looks at him like his dad almost.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where he gets shot in this field and the kid just, Philip just breaks down because he feels like he just lost the only father he ever had. And he's yelling his name and he's crying and the cops are taking him away. And he's like, Butch. It's just very emotional, and the connection they make is very emotional. My number seven would have been a movie called Dead Man Walking with Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon. A movie about redemption, a movie about coming to terms with our past. Very powerful scene in there because he's on death row. And Sean Penn, I want to say he won the Academy Award for that. He was at least nominated. But he just gives a gut-wrenching performance of a man on death row that has to come to terms with the crimes that he's committed.
Yeah.
And she plays Sister Helen Prejean. It's based on a true story.
Yeah.
And did an amazing job. So my number eight is a little bit of a guilty pleasure, but I cried during it, man. And I thought about it. I'm like, yes, this is a tearjerker for me, but the movie Titanic.
Never let go, Jack.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a cliche for a reason.
I mean, people are going to make fun of me, but I cry in that, bro. Yeah. I mean, it's a tearjerker. My number nine would have been a movie that I think you finally saw, but Logan from
2017. Oh.
You know, Wolverine
at
swan
the very
song.
End.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah, he finds out his daughter, basically.
Mm-hmm. And another Tom Hanks, my number 10, Saving Private Ryan, would have been my number 10.
Yeah. Matt Damon?
Matt Damon's also in that. Yeah. Matt Damon. Matt Damon's in that. Tom Hanks. Wow. Yeah. That's my number 10. So what are your honorable mentions, okay, buddy?
My first honorable mention would be every Christmas movie ever made. I cry when as soon as Christmas starts, it's basically the whole month of December for me. I cry the whole
Polar every
Express,
day.
For Polar Express. I cry at the end of Polar Express. Yeah, sure. It builds up because I think the image of Santa Claus is so perfect. The image of self-sacrifice, of giving, of offering yourself to give the children of the world a gift. But I mean, when, you know, this bell is a wonderful symbol for the spirit of Christmas, as am I. Mm-hmm. And then he lifts off and he flies away and I just break down. Mm-hmm. In Elf, I cry at the end of Elf.
Wow.
When they finally get enough Christmas spirit to get the thing going. I cry in Muppets Family Christmas. I cry in the in Muppets Christmas Carol. So my first honorable mention is Christmas.
That's good.
In every movie ever made.
It's the month of December. Yes. Okay.
Also, I want to give a shout out to Marvel. Marvel has so many, like Infinity War.
They do
when
it.
Spider-Man dies. Oh my goodness.
That is
like
tough.
I don't feel good.
Right.
When he's talking to Robert Downey Jr., Mr. Stark, I don't feel good, Mr. Stark. Right. Especially if you've just seen Homecoming. Right. Or Homecoming. Homecoming? Yeah.
Homecoming.
Especially if you've seen that. Time, so yeah. Good. Ooh, both the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. The first one when Groot sacrifices himself to save them all. Yep. And he goes, "What are you doing?" And he says, "We are Groot." Oh my gosh. The second one where the blue guy. Yes, but he sacrificed himself to save Star-Lord. And he raised him up because he talks about his dad, basically, who turns out to be this god. He may have been your father, but he wasn't your daddy.
Right.
And you flash back to him raising Star-Lord, and he sacrificed himself. Oh, gosh.
That's good.
So my next honorable mention is Marvel. They do it. I mean,
Marvel and Christmas.
Marvel and Christmas. I also want to mention...
God forbid if Marvel ever does a Christmas movie.
Val Kilmer's... the second best death scene of all time, Val Kilmer's death scene in Tombstone.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
You know, I just want a simple life. There is no simple life, Wyatt, and I'll just get on with it. That's a wonderful one. Mm-hmm. There's a great movie called About Time.
You mentioned that once before, I think.
It's about a father and son, and that chokes me up as well. The father tells the son they have powers, and there's a scene in that. It's about coming to appreciate life.
I feel like you mentioned that on a different list, but I can't remember what it was.
Yes, that's a great movie.
All right, so going.
Yeah, About Time, and I probably have more, but that's...
No, of course, yeah. So we're going to head over to social media and see what the fans had to say. We had a ton of feedback on this one. I guess people love crying in their house in the dark. I don't know. So let's open up the suggestion box. What's in the box? Come on, Brad Pitt. We got to get that. We got to get that clip together. All right. So let's see. We'll start over on Twitter. Audiobox on Twitter said, "Marley and Me absolutely broke me.
The book made me." I never saw the movie. The book made me bawl. You
I can't
are
deal with dogs dying.
You
bro.
Are a good dog.
I can't deal with dogs dying in cinema, bro.
That book. I listened to the book on tape. And I bawled at the end.
So let's see. Our buddy Nick from the Epic Film Guys, love him. I just went on the show last week and talked about a new horror film called Midsummer. And I love going on that program and that he's been on here a few times. He said too many because he's an emotional guy. But he said there were two films last year that had him utterly pouring tears. They were A Star Is Born and Won't You Be My Neighbor? The Mr. Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
The Mr. Rogers documentary. Matt Lewinsky, who every week has given us great feedback, he said Brian's Song, Remember the Titans, and Field of Dreams.
Ah!
Surprised we didn't mention Field of Dreams. You want to have a catch?
Want to have a catch? Because he says, okay, what is is this heaven? No, this is Iowa. Blah 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 blah. The whole time, at the very end, for the first time, he says, "Hey, Dad," and he calls him Dad.
Yeah,
it's emotional. Want to have a catch?
It's emotional, bro.
And he says, "I'd like that, son."
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised we didn't.
Yeah, Field of Dreams. Field of Dreams.
Here's another Field of Dreams. Listen, Jameson Rabbit also often giving us feedback. Thank you so much, buddy. He's got My Girl.
Macaulay Culkin.
We forgot
with the
My
bees.
Girl.
With
Come
the bees.
On, dude. In fact, you know what? My wife named that one when I told her we were going to be doing this a few weeks ago. She's like, "My Girl." Field of Dreams, Awakenings, another Robin Williams joint. Good Will Hunting, and Dear Zachary. Okay. Dear Zachary, I've not
seen. Yeah, I've seen that one.
But I agree with all his other ones. Let's see. No Better Death over on Twitter said, "Have you ever watched A Dog's Way Home?" Which I have not.
No.
But he or she says, "It's so sad it borders on psychological torture."
I felt the same way. Have you seen, I've saw it on a lot of lists, have you seen the movie Room?
No, my wife
has. Oh my gosh.
I want to.
That movie is so
Brie
sad.
Brie Larson, Captain Marvel.
I hated that movie because it was so good.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Oh, I'm not going to be able to pronounce
She was Captain Marvel. She could just blow out of the building. She's stuck in this building.
Yeah,
she's Captain Marvel.
Why didn't she use her powers?
Captain Marvel.
I guess that was pre the accident. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be able to pronounce this right, but Alain EIQ on Twitter says, "Sounds the good. Green Mile."
And, I think I'm going to take a rest now, boss.
Then the Never-Ending Story. She says, "I dare you not to cry at that scene." Yeah, when the horse gets stuck in the muck there. In the Paradise After Dark replied with a gif of someone breaking down crying and said, "Yes, Never-Ending Story." Yeah. Let's see what else we got over here on Twitter. I thought this was interesting. on two of these. So Jamie Irwin over on Twitter says Midnight Cowboy, and then these two really interested me: The Wizard of Oz,
Wizard of Oz,
and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Interesting.
Now the ending to Planes and Trains, Automobiles, I can see because that's when you haven't seen it.
No.
Well, that's when we realize John Candy, because he's been saying throughout the picture to Steve Martin's character that he's trying to get back home to his family. And what we learn in the final act of the film is that his family's gone. He doesn't have a family. He's by himself. He's just been telling that lie so he doesn't feel alone. So Steve Martin, who really couldn't stand this guy, they were kind of enemies to be honest throughout the bulk of the movie, invites him to his house for Thanksgiving. Oh. And he finally has people to be with at the holidays. So that is an emotional ending, but the movie's just hilarious prior to that. So I don't really think of it as a tearjerker. So I thought it was interesting. Let's see. Word Salad Radio says The Impossible, Inside Out, which we mentioned. Yeah. And when Bing Bong goes, forget it. How about this one? How about John Smith over on Twitter says Con Air. Nicholas Cage.
Okay.
And he says the final scene when he sees his daughter and then Leanne Rimes comes on, which, I mean, it is emotional.
Yeah.
The Nomcast on Twitter, you're going to like this. It's A Wonderful Life.
Oh!
Christmas.
To my brother, the richest man in town. I mean, come on!
And then another...
Richest man in town.
A few other good ones that he has, the Nomcast.
Yeah.
E.T.
Yeah.
My Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And Good Will Hunting, and he put an asterisk that says, it's not your fault. And that's what it's I was saying. A lot of people, you know, just immediately think of that scene because it's so emotional. Yeah. But the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon kind of story
got me a little more. There's so many. Yeah, we're not going to start talking about that again, but there's so much of that one.
Let's see. I tell you what. Let's go to Facebook now, to our Facebook fan page.
Facebook.
We appreciate those guys. Let's see. Amanda, been on the show several times, love her. She says Monsters, Inc.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What Dreams May Come. Robin Williams loves invoking tears,
That's a good death movie as well.
Coco,
yeah.
Can see that. Remember Me. Won't You Be My Neighbor, which Nick mentioned. And then Call Me By Your Name, which I know you probably haven't seen, but it's a movie I love from a couple years ago. It takes place in the 80s. Timothy Chalamet, Armie Hammer. It's a love story that's a gay love story, but it's them kind of having a summer romance and then having to not only say goodbye to each other, but having to know, because it's a secret. And not only saying goodbye to each other, but having to know you're never going to see this person ever again. This is, and the scene when Armie Hammer's character leaves on the train, bro, because if you just put yourself in that position, like your wife or anybody that you love, and like, this is the moment they're walking out of your field of view and you're never going to see them again. Because you have to also remember this in the 80s. So, I mean, maybe a telephone call, but you're not going to be able to have a romantic relationship with ever again. So it's very, very powerful. I agree with her there.
Very strawberry wine.
Tony over on the Facebook fan page. Now, I love this, bro. I love that she did this, and I told her that on Facebook, but let me build up to that. So she starts with Forrest Gump.
Okay. Oh, Forrest Gump.
Absolutely.
I buried you here under our tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jen A. No, absolutely. Yeah. And he loses his mom. Absolutely.
And that's all I have to say about it.
The Way We Were, Brian's song. Mm-hmm. And then I love this. And I would have never, kind of like you did with Gladiator, I would have never thought of it, but she threw A Quiet Place in there.
A Quiet Place.
Did you ever see A Quiet Place?
No.
My favorite movie of the year last year is a horror movie, and it is emotional. John Krasinski, like you said with Bruce Willis, he sacrifices himself for his family with these kind of like mysterious monsters or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a very fantastical story, but it was very emotional and what he did for his family there. Let's see. This is a good one. Another Tim Burton film. So Phil Rude over on the Facebook fan page says Big Fish.
Big Fish.
Gets him every damn time.
That's good. The very when the dad says, you know, tell me about the story, and he tells him about the story, and you find, it's about
now.
About
finding I need you to do me a favor for this one. This is going to be the last mention of the day.
Okay.
But I need you to do me a favor. Okay. I need you to remain calm because I want to see your reaction to this.
I'm okay.
Because
I'm taking the pills, I'm fine.
When our good friend Lauren dropped this on Facebook, I almost put it in my list, to be honest, because she is 100% right, and what this spawned is amazing. Okay. If you think about it for ground zero for what we know now. Okay. And I need you to be ready for this. So she elaborates later, but I'll just start by her first comment.
Okay.
Her first comment is, let's be honest. Rogue One.
Interesting.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Rogue One.
It's a great movie.
The ending on the beach.
Yeah.
The catapult for hope.
Yeah.
The catapult for a new hope and what they sacrificed. What she ends up, she says, other than Rogue One. Oh, okay. Drew responded to her, and Drew Hallam says, Lauren, we all needed that hope. Now we know how much that hope costs.
Yeah.
Talking about Rogue One.
Because there's a very brief mention in New Hope. Many so-and-so died to bring us this information.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get to go through the thing, what sacrifice is all about. And I think sacrifice is a big theme in this. You know?
Absolutely. And Lauren responded to Drew. She said, the fact that your comment just brought me to tears says enough. And then he says, yeah, those were my exact words in the theater when the movie was over and the lights came up.
Because every single one, every single person died. Every single one.
And to finish Lauren's comment out, she says, other than Rogue One, I've cried incessantly throughout movies like P.S. I Love You, which I think that's Gerard Butler, I think, is in that. But I've never seen that one. And then she says Avengers Endgame, which you'll like. Endgame was, I mean, we know now what we know. But, I mean, Endgame was
I cried for
intense. I guess Infinity War, maybe, we didn't really know yet. Infinity War, so that's also a little bit of a tearjerker. But
I know Infinity War, I cried at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Endgame was just one big swan song. Right. The first 2 hours was the swan song of Infinity War.
Right.
But
I think the culmination is emotional. Yeah. Oh, you watch this 21 movies or whatever.
When the portals open and everyone comes back, every hero, you're like, oh, la, la, la.
That's intense, bro.
I was balling at that point.
That's intense, bro. So that's it. That's our feedback for this week over in the suggestion box. You want to close it? I was going to say, is the closing sound the same as the opening? Have we not got WD-40 for that thing yet? We can't get WD-40 for it because we won't have a sound effect.
That's the problem.
So why don't you give us your final thought, man? That was our episode 86, Tearjerkers. What do you got for
us? We are story people, and stories have a way of transmitting information. Stories have a way of transmitting experiences. Just these things are very humaning. The things that makes us cry, the things that make us laugh, the things that bring us to tears, all these things describe what makes us human. So remember that these stories have a way of transmitting a deeper reality, a part of our life. So, you know, tell your story. Just get into that and share the stories with everyone else.
I love it, man.
That's all I can say.
And, you know, I think it's
not much of a thought today. Just, you know, stories.
We crack jokes, and we, you know, especially me, act a little stupid or whatever. But I mean, an episode like today, it's cool, man, because I saw you getting emotional.
Yeah.
And I did too. And movies and music speak to us, speak to humanity, you know, and it's you're a deep guy and you're a spiritual guy and you're a minister. And it's great to be able to share this hour with you. It was an awesome
discussion.
It's about
transmitting experience. It's like I experienced this, you experienced life, and through stories we can share this through music and media. Yeah,
absolutely, man. It was an awesome discussion. I appreciate it as always. So I tell you what, man, I didn't, you know, because we usually come up with the next topic
before we do.
I didn't talk to you about this. Now, listen, this was pitched to us over on social media. And I thought this might appeal to you. So what do you feel about next month if we do, for our next episode, if we do our top five sequels that are better than the original?
Ooh, I like it.
All right, you want to do it? You think you got enough there to pull that out for 7-8 movies?
Sequels
you
can do it. That are better than the original.
Yeah. And it can be any, it doesn't have to be part 2. It can be part 5. It can be just any sequel that came out after the first one.
I think I can do it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a shit ton of sequels. I hope so. So our episode 87 then will be our top five sequels that are better than the original. Looking forward to it, Andy.
I love it.
All the information in the show notes, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Andy, thank you for being here.
Hey, brother. I know I cry. I wipe my face on your shirt, and it's just a good thing.
I'll see you next time, man.
I'll be here.
Ain't no angel gonna greet me. It's just you and I, my friend. And my clothes don't fit me no more. I walk 1,000 miles just to slip this ski. Night is falling, I'm blind awake. I can feel myself fading away. So receive me, brother, with you faithless kiss, or will we leave each other alone like this on the streets of Philadelphia?
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.